right, good afternoon. Our next presenter is Tony Peterle. He started in 1974, so let's do some quick math in our heads. How many years is that? Come on. 49, there we go, we got a winner. All right. He is with WorldCast Systems, got 18 years there. He started as a disc jockey, did traffic engineering, and currently drives a 75-year-old non-hybrid car to work. Must have AM radio, right? Yeah. Excellent. Tony's going to be talking about MPX over IP compression schemes. It's going to provide you with insights on how to ensure the most optimized operations with highest quality and transparency at lower costs. Tony Peterle.
Thank you much. Do I have a mouse control? Because I've got some audio things that I need to trigger, or I can just ask you guys to click on them.
Is the clicker up there?
The clicker's here,
yeah. That's your trigger, right? Bell
trigger. Okay. Well, I need to actually point at something on the screen and click it in a specific location. We'll see how it works out. For example, right now I need to play that audio thing. Okay, it works. Just wanted to make sure. Anybody identify that ringtone? Anyone? Misty passed? Let's see if I can get it to play again. No? James Coburn, Our Man Flint. For some reason, that movie came out when I was 7 years old, and that ringtone stuck in my head, and I love it ever since. All right, so thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I've got a lot of people to thank. We'll introduce them. But first off, the goal of this, really, we started brewing on this concept, this presentation, back in like April of this year. There's a lot of development and a lot of work going on right now in transporting MPX composite signal over IP networks. It's becoming more and more popular. A lot of the broadcasters in the major markets are doing linear MPX over IP, and that's great if you've got the bandwidth. They have plenty of it, so 3 megabits a second per MPX composite feed is an achievable goal for them. For a lot of the rest of us, though, it's a little bit more difficult to find that kind of bandwidth reliably out in the real world. So, what can we do? Well, we can aggregate several providers together until we get that big 3 megabit pipe, or we can find a way to compress that data, because all data can be compressed. It's just a question of what you give up. So, MPX compression schemes have been developed. We've got transmission bit rates now. MPX micro MPX plus is 176 is still the lowest. Yeah, that's the lowest they have, but you know, they'll be pushing it further. So you can really get the bandwidth down and still get, you know, the composite signal to the destination, or at least some form of the composite signal. So what we attempted to do is find out what the price is. Yeah, when we reduce that bandwidth, when we compress the composite signal, what are we giving up? And we wanted to focus on what actually comes out the other end. We wanted to focus on what reaches the listener's ears, because that really is the be-all, end-all judge of what we do. Right? If we don't make the listener's ears happy, they're going to find something else to listen to. They got plenty of options. And so we wanted to focus that and see if we could compare the different types of MPX compression and see if they had any effect on the signal that the listener could eventually perceive. So we kind of looked at doing it just like kind of a basic proof of performance, right? Audio frequency response, harmonic distortion, stereo separation. Of course, none of that is practical in the real world, because in the real world, we've got dynamic content. So in the real world, we would set up extensive double-blind listening tests with a variety of different audio sources and a variety of different evaluators, listeners, who could score the various IP MPX over IP compression schemes and tell us which one they thought sounded best, right? That's the kind of testing we did with SmartFM, our MDCL for FM that we developed. When we were going through the development on that, we did hundreds of hours of double-blind listening tests. We didn't have the resources to do that. So we wanted to do something a little more tangible, a little more hands-on, a little more objective. So the proof of performance was kind of the headway. That's the opening to get into it. And then, of course, we also wanted to look at the PPM encoding efficiency, because that's something, PPM is an audio signal. And so if that audio signal is damaged or mishandled in any way, it could have a noticeable effect on the PPM decodes that you get, because that's all audio, right? It's, again, it's what reaches the listener's ears, whether that ear is a human ear or a little wearable monitor that's picking up the audio on some sort of little microphone, right? It's all audio. So that's what we wanted to look at. So I didn't have any of this stuff, right? I have no lab. I don't have any products, because we wanted to test as many different options that are on the market as possible. So fortunately, I have an excellent friend and colleague by the name of Shane Tobin, who works at EMF, and by gosh, he has a lab. And he has the power to call up manufacturers and say, hey, we're testing MPX over IP, send us what you got, and get a big pile of equipment on his desk. So that was great. The other member of the team is Paul Schulens, Schulens Solutions. A lot of you know him, many years with Cumulus, just an excellent engineer, especially when it comes to software, wrote his own facility control software and all kinds of things. Paul had an essential element of the testing that we did not have in California, and that is a PPM decoding monitor, specifically the TVC15. So when Omnia introduced the Voltaire is the thing that boosts the PPM signal, they also introduced the TVC15, which was the companion that would let you see what the effects of the Voltaire were, how your PPM signal was coming through over the air. So Paul had one of those in his lab, and since the PPM signal is audio, right, we determined that we could record the PPM signal in the lab in California, ship the files off to Paul, he could run through the TVC15 and get the results that way. So that was the team that we put together. Now, field of competition, in more or less alphabetical order. No. We've got, of course, the 2WCOM. That ran a linear 16-bit MPX over IP. It could also do the micro MPX compression scheme at 320, 576 kilobits. We had the APT audio codecs that can do MPX, also linear 16-bit. They can do other bit rates, right? 2WCOM and the APT can both do 24-bit linear if you want to go that route. But we figure once you get to linear, we're outside the scope of this test, right? We're looking specifically on the effects of MPX over IP compression. So pretty much anybody can do linear and do a pretty good job of it. We'll see some charts from that later on. So the APT codec was in there, also running linear, and our own APT MPX compression, 300, 600, and 900 kilobits a second are the available options on that. The Gates Air, MPXPs, we did not have the license to run the micro MPX compression, but if you do have that license, they can also do micro MPX at the same bit rates, 320 and 576, as the Omnia, the micro MPX nodes, 320 and 576 bits micro MPX, and then the Timio, which is Hans von Zupten's own product. He's the guy who developed micro MPX and now micro MPX Plus, which has even lower bit rates available. So he created micro MPX and licensed it to the other manufacturers. So really, when you get down to it, there are only two choices as far as compression on for MPX composite over IP. There's APT. Our developer goes by the name of Hartmut, because that's his name. Hartmut Forster, and then you've got micro MPX, which is Hans von Zupten. So Hartmut versus Hans is kind of what we're looking at. So those, at this point, that's the only thing. Digigram, well, we didn't get a set of Digigram boxes on the bench in time for this test, but I understand those are in the pipeline. Those also will offer the micro MPX compression scheme. So here's the test bench, controlled chaos. Shane was the orchestrator and the operator of all the tests. He set up all the equipment. I was basically a glorified lab rat, punching cables and connecting things the way that Shane told me to. We kind of checked on each other to make sure we were following the same processes all the way through. So you can see quite a pile of equipment here on the bench. We've got on the left, you can see that's the D-scope. That was our audio source and analyzer for the audio-based tests. And you can see a couple of the APT-IP codecs there, 2WCOM below that, the micro MPX nodes in the middle, and then the kind of the source stack is all the stuff over on the left. At one time, we were using the Inovonix to do some of the readings coming back to look at the spectrum. You can see the PPM, the Nielsen PPM encoder, and the MECM, the multi-channel encoding monitor, which we were had in the test. And then on the bottom right is the Omnia 9. The Omnia 9 was a godsend for what we were trying to do. It was absolutely it was a great box. It had all the features we needed into it, because we were going to need audio to do our PPM encoding tests, and we could record the audio files and play them back from the Omnia. It could be the stereo generator. It could be it has a composite input, so we could feed composite into it, and it would demodulate it and give us the result. It could record the audio that we got back from the MPX transport chain. And so we could save that and send it off for the PPM analysis. And of course, it has the built-in PPM insertion point, so we could make sure the encoding got put in the right spot. The D-scope, I talked about it. That's what we did use for our audio test, frequency response, and THD. So if we look at the audio performance test, this is the setup that we had. So the D-scope was our source. It generated the audio, which went into the audio input of the 9. We had the option of turning processing on or off. Obviously, for the straight audio test, the processing was off because we wanted to just get a clean frequency sweep. We did not do any PPM insertion. Then we ran it through the stereo generator, out through whatever MPX transport we were testing, then right back into the Omnia, MPX decode, left and right audio, and that goes back into the D-scope for the analysis. So what did we see? So here's our baseline. This is frequency response and total harmonic distortion. Frequency response is the top red line. The total harmonic distortion is the bottom blue line. The scale is about 0 to 20 kilohertz. I have been told that that little boost up in the high end, it's only like a half a dB or whatever, but apparently that's sort of a signature of the Omnia 9. It does that to all the audio. Again, it's a negligible amount. And we can see the key things that we're looking at here is that audio frequency response starts to roll off at about 8K. The total harmonic distortion starts to climb at about 9 kilohertz of audio response. So if we look at that in a different way, let's have a look at stereo separation. So we were feeding channel audio into one channel only, and we got a separation between the two audio channels coming back through the D-scope of about 50 dB. So that's our baseline. That's nothing fancy. That's just a piece of coax from the Omnia 9 stereo generator output right back into the Omnia 9 composite input. So that theoretically is as clean as it could possibly get. So we ran through the micro MPX nodes at 320 kilobits a second. We saw a slight reduction in the both the frequency response and the total harmonic distortion. They both started their curves about 1K earlier than they did on just a straight cable. Again, it's not a huge difference. Slight degradation also in the stereo separation. Lost about 10 dB, roughly, just kind of eyeballing the distance. You can also see a little reduction in the separation as you get up into the higher frequency bands, 8 to 10K and above. That was also typical at 576 kilobits. So again, this is the micro MPX nodes, frequency response and distortion. A little better than at 320, where it's starting to roll off at 8K, and the total harmonic distortion starts up at about the same, 8K. And you'd expect that. As the frequency roll-off goes, the distortion goes up because the output signal doesn't match the input. Here are the MPX nodes at 570 kilobits, stereo separation, about the same as it was at 320, about 40 dB of separation. So, APT-MPX. Now, for some reason, and I don't know why, this thing scaled differently, and our total harmonic distortion, if you look at the earlier slides, total harmonic distortion on everything, including the cable, right? Total harmonic distortion is around 0.25 or so, a little more than 0.25%. If you look at the first chart on the APT, the total harmonic distortion is lower by a factor of 10. It's below 0.025%. That's less than even the cable. So the first sort of anomalous result is revealed. There's going to be a lot of kind of head-scratching data that we came across that I'm going to share with you. And we're going to talk about how we could improve our testing methods. We're going to be presenting the same content again at the IEEE in Washington, D.C. in November. So anything we can do to kind of improve what we're doing and get better, more tangible results. So this is the APTX MPX compression at 300 kilobits a second. That's the lowest bit rate. You can see the little Omnia 9 boost, and roll-off starts at about 7K. Now, the harmonic distortion starts climbing at 4K, but because it's starting so low, we don't get up to that the 0.25 point until we're well over 10 kilohertz. So again, don't know why the chart came out that way on the APT codecs, but it was the same with the higher bit rates. APT MPX, losing a little bit of stereo separation even still. 30 dB, again, this isn't the lowest bit rate, 300 kilobits a second. 30 dB of separation with a reduction in that separation as you go up into the upper frequency bands. 600 kilobits, this is the next highest bit rate for APT MPX. Roll off at about 8K, total harmonic distortion starts actually even earlier, but again, because it's so low to begin with, it doesn't climb up above the baseline until above 10 kilohertz. A little bit better, we're 40 dB on the stereo separation for the 600 kilobits per second bit rate. Now we look at 900. Now the 900, the APT MPX compression is a little different because at 900 kilohertz, well, I'll start off with the bad news, is that APT MPX at 300 and 600 kilobits a second, we pass only the audio. No RDS, nothing higher than just the audio and the stereo, right? So left minus right, left plus right, no more at those lower bit rates. At 900 kilobits a second, APT is sampling the entire composite signal all the way up past 80K and compressing that as a single entity. So we call that the holistic compression mode. So instead of because other compression schemes, micro MPX, seem to be disassembling the signal and transmitting only the parts that are necessary and then reassembling, recreating the signal up at the receive end. So the holistic 900 kilobits a second does none of that. It just samples the whole composite and compresses the whole thing as one. So you can see pretty smooth frequency response all the way up to 9K or so. Total harmonic distortion doesn't start to climb up until you're over 10 kilohertz. And it doesn't do all that well at stereo separation for some reason. We're only getting about 20 dB. It actually starts to improve as the frequency goes up. So again, why? I don't know. We're just showing what we got. So let's take a look at the 2WCOM. Now this is micro MPX, just like the micro MPX nodes from Omnia. It's just a different front end. All of our tests for this paper were done using analog MPX inputs and outputs. I have a couple of slides where we're using MPX over AES. That makes a big difference. But we figure even if the different manufacturers are running the same compression scheme, they're all running micro MPX, the differences would come down to hardware. It would come down to the quality of the I/O hardware, the A to D converters, and that sort of thing, because the compression schemes are all the same. So you can see differences, even using the same compression, between the Omnia micro MPX nodes and the 2WCOM. And we might see even more differences when we get the digigrams on the bench. So this is all about the hardware. So the 2WCOM, really nice total harmonic distortion, doesn't start to climb until about 11 kilohertz. The frequency response roll-off starts at 9. Stereo separation, some of the best in the bunch, about 45 dB stereo separation, and this is at the lowest bit rate, 320 kilobits a second. If we look at it at 576, again, very flat. I didn't even see the total harmonic distortion, didn't even start to climb at 20K. That is just fantastic. Frequency response well over 10K. So that's a nice clean option, and I think they did pretty well on the stereo separation, yeah, about 45 dB on that one. So you can compare, you can look at those numbers compared to the Omnia micro MPX node numbers and say, all right, well, it's not the compression that's causing those differences because it's the same compression scheme, exact same software. It's just a question of the I/O hardware. So then we went even lower. This is the micro MPX Plus. This is running in that Timio chassis that we had in the rack. So this is Hans's lowest bit rate at the moment. I'm sure he may be cooking on something else. You can see the little Omnia 9 boost in the frequency response up there towards the high end. You can see the distortion pretty low, starts to roll up at about 6K. So that is at 176 kilobits a second, and that's, you know, you're giving up some of the response in the THD in the high frequency section, but if you can live with that, that's a pretty low amount of bandwidth to get a composite signal through. So MPX, micro MPX plus at 800 kilobits a second, this is the other bit rate, about the same, right? Giving up a little bit on both ends of the high frequency response. So here are a couple of charts of the linear. That's what we were telling each other. It's like, okay, if you can't get linear right. So this is the gates error. This is the MPXP linear 16-bit. Again, just about what you expect. You know, get right up to 10K, a little bit more before things start to go a little wonky. If we look at, this is 2WCOM. They're linear, very clean. Total harmonic distortion looks great up above 10K even, so that's fantastic. Here's the APT linear, just like the rest, you know, nice and flat all the way out. So if you got the bandwidth to do linear, do linear. Everything's going to look great, and it's going to sound great, and you're going to be in good shape. So now let's get to PPM encoding. This was our test setup for the PPM encoding test. So we had an audio file in the Omnia 9, stored in the Omnia 9, so we would play that audio file. We had the option, and we ran two sets of tests, one with no processing, and another set of tests with the what they call the reference processing on the Omnia 9. So we could see, of course, we assumed that the processed audio would give the PPM signal a better traction, better more places to hide. So the PPM encoding is in the loop there, optional, through the stereo generator, through whatever our MPX transport, and then back into the Omnia, demodulated. We took the left-right audio out to the PPM monitor, the MECM that we had, and we made an audio recording, which we then sent to Paul Schulens, and he ran it through his TVC15 to get that data. So that's the procedure that we did, and we have come to a conclusion already about what we may have done wrong, and we'll cover that here in a minute. So we wanted to play a long audio file because Paul said, you know, if you have an audio file 15, 20 minutes, that gives the encoding a little more time to kind of get in, get settled. You're only getting monitoring readings about once a minute, so you want to have a long enough file that you can get a lot of those codes decoded and a lot of measurements done. So we called up, but Shane emailed the production director of EMF, of KLOV Air One. Guy by the name of Garrett, and he was kind enough to provide us with three audio samples. So we structured this. Our intent was to test the PPM encoding. Let's challenge it. So we started with 6 minutes of dry voice, which is the worst possible environment for the. Now it's got a mic processor on it, but the first 6 minutes of the audio file. Oh no, I'm going to need you to click on that left-hand speaker for me, please.
Will be broadcast tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern on TBN. All right, from June 3rd to the 9th, we say this.
All right, so he gave us 6 minutes of a voice track session. He'd be done recording some promos for an awards show that they were having on TBN. And there were many more interesting outtakes in there, which we have not included in this presentation today. Okay, so then we had 6 minutes of dense audio, which I'll get to in a second. And then we wanted 6 minutes of ambient music, something not so loud and crunchy, but might still give the PPM signal sort of a medium between the dry voice and the hard music. So if you could click on the right-hand speaker for me, please. I feel like I'm in a spa. Okay, so again, nothing too dense. We ran it through with and without the processing, but even that little bit of audio, it's going to give some place for the PPM signal to latch onto. Now, when we wanted 6 minutes of dense audio, I wasn't quite sure what to expect. This was KLOV that we were dealing with, so I didn't know whether we were going to get the Hallelujah chorus, Or maybe the latest hit from Brandon Lake and Phil Wickham. I don't know, something positive and encouraging. What we did not expect was what we got. The Lair guitar helps. Okay, so 6 minutes of that type of audio, plenty of spaces for the PPM signal and the encoding to hide. So we thought we had a pretty good blend, right? 6 minutes of horrible, 6 minutes of really good audio, and then 6 minutes of heh, and we'll see how it all shakes out. So all of that audio came back, fed into the Mecham. We recorded the files, wave files, and sent them to Paul. He put them through the TVC-1.5 twice for each file so we could average the results. As far as the data, the results that we got, that's kind of the one-word summary. Actually, that word is not quite the right word. What we really should have is this. These results, it's more scattered than shooting a shotgun at a wall 20 yards away. It's more like popping a paint balloon in the center of the room. The data was just everywhere, and a lot of it made no sense. So we're like I say, we're already thinking about ways that we can refine our methods. I'll talk about that here in a minute. But let's see. This is the data that we actually got back from the TVC-1.5. This is the two passes of one representative file, and the key things that we're looking at are the reset count and the confidence, right? The reset count is how many codes that were detected in that minute of audio, successfully detected. The confidence is kind of the encodability of the audio. So those two scores tell us what's going on with the PPM. If you look at them on a graph, they would look like this. So the bars, little bars at the bottom, are the number of successfully decoded codes. The line is the confidence. The big bar on the right is the total number of resets that we got, the total number of counts. And you can clearly see, you know, the first 6 minutes of the file were crap. There's nothing there for the PPM to hang on to. So we expected and got very low scores in that first 6 minutes of audio, and then things picked up when the audio got more. And so I ran through all the data and averaged everything out, the two processes for each bit rate and each processing or no processing from each manufacturer. We listened to those three audio files, that 18 minutes of audio, almost 30 times total, right, to get all the different recordings for all the different various combinations of what we were doing. So averaging all the data together, we got the average reset score for the two passes of the file, and then the average confidence rating. So we can kind of anchor those two. This is reference. This is straight coax. This is coming through with processing, PPM encoding, out the Omnia, back in, record it, send it off to get analyzed. So this theoretically is the best it could be, the cleanest possible pass on that audio file with the PPM encoding. Now, if we do that with micro MPX nodes at 320 bits a second, it actually gets better. We have a 0.5 increase on the reset count. The confidence rating is exactly the same at 0.3741. So that was the first data point that made us go, huh? That, it just intrinsically doesn't make sense. You know, nothing should be better than the straight coax. So that's where the inconceivable came from. So we can look at some more. This is PPM encoded. This is with the processing. This is the Gates Air MPX transport linear. So this also should be really good, and it is, because we've got, you know, 3746 on the average confidence rating. That's a little better. But what's the reset count? 130, it's lower. So we did not detect as many codes successfully on linear as we did on micro MPX at 320 kilobits a second. So at this point, I decided to just kind of look at one more. Here's APT MPX, average reset very high, 149. Average confidence reading also quite high at 3780. That's at the lower bit rate. We ran that same audio file a second time, and it came through much lower. So here are the scattered results. This is without processing, and you can see obviously the reset scores are much worse The confidence scores are much worse when the audio is unprocessed. So the denser you can make the audio, obviously, the more traction the PPM signal gets. So, but again, the rankings don't make a whole lot of sense. So micro MPX at 600, or no, micro MPX plus at 800, actually scored the best without processing. Then the gates are linear, 2WCOM linear, MPX nodes at low bit rate, APT MPX, APT linear, micro MPX, straight coax, there it is, 115 and 3322. It was in the bottom three in terms of performance on the PPM encoding with no processing. Does that make sense? No. So what I'm saying is that the data that we got is way too scattered to make any sense. It's incoherent, it's incongruous, and we hope to have some more refined methods and maybe some helpful suggestions from people who know, and we'll see what we get. Now, with the processing, a little bit better, still almost inconceivable. 2WCOM at 320 bits per second, highest score. Lowest bit rate, highest score. Followed by the APT MPX at 300, again, and they showed you that one. And then look just to the right next to Wallace Shawn there, APT MPX at 300 megabits per second, second pass, much lower score. And the insanity even gets more intense as you look at it in a more granular way. So pick out the straight coax. Top column, top row, center column. Again, the straight coax, which should have been the king of the roost as far as this test was concerned, was mid-pack in terms of the results that we got. So again, not something that makes a lot of sense. Here's one of those granular inconsistencies that I was talking about. First part of the audio is dry voice, so we would expect a fairly low resound count, like zeros and ones, and that's what we saw in most all the passes. You could see one of them popped a 5 in there, I saw a 4, and then the two reset counts on the right, those are the same audio file. Run through the TVC15 two times. The first time, it popped out a 10 in the first minute of the audio. That's inconceivable. Interestingly enough, this, you know, second pass is more like what we were expecting, all zeros for the first 6 minutes. But the total reset count on both of those passes was exactly the same, 137. So, our planned improvements, we're going to do some more testing using only dense audio, because we're obviously the PPM signal is challenged enough as it is. There are a lot of inconsistencies in the data and the results that we were getting. So we're going to make a shorter audio file, probably about 6 minutes. It'll be dense audio. It'll be heavily processed. Give the PPM signal as much traction as we possibly can. Once we get that recording, we're going to run it through the TVC15 10 or more times. Again, try and average it out, get that sort of consistency going. The other thing, and my opinion is this is probably the critical thing, we have no idea about how that audio file is being encoded. We don't know if it's being encoded consistently every time, because for this, the way we set up this test, we ran the audio file through the Omnia, got the encoding through the transport, so we did that, individual audio files for each, well, the source audio was the same, but what was encoded and actually transported may have been different, right? We don't know that the PPM encoder was encoding that audio exactly the same way every time. There's some possibility that the space between the ending of one test and the beginning of the next, you know, if we ended one test and we were quickly set up and we started the next test in less than a minute, you know, maybe the PPM encoder had some sort of a halo, an afterglow, or whatever the audio that it had before. Who knows? So what I think is going to make we'll take that completely out of the equation. We're going to record the audio file once with the PPM encoding, and then we're going to pass that through the MPX transport. So at least we know what goes into the MPX transport, into our test subject, is going to be exactly the same every time. So then we can see with 10 passes of each of those files through the TVC15, we can maybe get some more consistent, some more results that we can hang our hat on. Right now, there's no indication of any any compression scheme being better for PPM encoding than any other. So then we played around with some composite sweeps, right? Composite signal is an analog signal. We can put a frequency sweep in there of however much we want. We can put white noise into it. We can test out however we want. So this is a logarithmic frequency sweep of the analog. This is right coming out of the Omni 9 stereo generator, right into the Omni 9 MPX input. And that's about what you would expect to see on a composite sweep. Now, if we pass that composite through the MPX nodes, Omni MPX nodes, there are a couple of holes. So the left-hand hole is the 19 kilohertz pilot. The right-hand hole starts at about 57 kilohertz, where the RDS would go. So we ran this sweep several times, and occasionally we would see that the pilot pop up. And so our analysis of that behavior was that the micro MPX was sampling, compressing the composite signal. It would not bother to sample or transport the pilot, because you can recreate that easily at the other end. And we believe that they would decode the RDS, transport only the data, which is, you know, 300 kilobits a second, if that. Or no, 300 bits a second. It's old teletype speed RDS data. So they could send just the RDS data in hexadecimal or ASCII or whatever they wanted to, and again, recreate and populate the RDS data at the receive end. So that's one of the notes, and saw the same thing at the 576 kilobit bit rate. So here's what happens when we go to digital. So this is a log sweep of the MPX digital input on the APT-IP codecs. I think this is our 900 kilobits. That's the holistic. See if I can read that. Yeah, that's 2WCOM, 16-bit linear. That's us. And I think we have one more. Yeah, here's the 900. So that's the holistic algorithm, 900 kilobits a second with a frequency sweep that goes flat up to about 70-80K. Here we are looking at, this is the micro MPX. This is the frequency response. The scale shifted on this one. So in this case, you could see it detected a pilot signal, so it reproduced the pilot signal on the far end. So we actually see the pilot in that sweep. That's at, I think, 320. And here we are at 576, same thing. You can see the pilot being reproduced. We didn't have an RDS on there, but you can see the RDS carrier is there. So it detected something that it thought was RDS at any rate. So, summary. We did see some slight degradations, frequency response and stereo separation based on the different algorithms. Clearly, we need more testing for the PPM efficiency, the PPM effects. We're going to do the single file for the source. We're going to run it through the TVC15 more times, try and find some consistency, and we'll also get some other players in. Digigram has already committed to sending us a couple of units for test, and we know of one or two other players that may be introducing some MPX over IP transport. So, again, we're presenting again in DC at the IEEE in November, so we'll try and have some more data by then and see where it goes. And now, he's not here. It's time for Shane's takeaways. So Shane sent me this just yesterday morning. So these are his observations. He was surprised to know that there were only two MPX compression choices, right? Micro MPX or APT MPX. Hans versus Hartmann. So he had thought that that was not the case. Two different approaches. They have their pluses and the minuses. He noted that depending on the hardware, either compression scheme or linear can be supportive of a SFN network, so they can all be synchronized. There are implementations of the micro MPX he found to be pretty consistent. Of course, some differences could be introduced because of the differences in hardware, the ADD converters, input sections, and whatnot. AES MPX offers better performance, more testing needed. So we'll check that out. APT MPX subjectively, I was going to ask him about his methods on this one, but he says subjectively, the APT MPX performed better in terms of overall audit, particularly the 900 kilobits, the holistic one. Further takeaways from Shane, he said micro MPX looked to be the winner in terms of stereo separation on the compressed modes. 2WCOM was also right up there in terms of stereo separation. The watermarking and coding tests seem to indicate that all codecs will pass the signal relatively well. Some inconsistencies. Shane also agrees we need more testing. All codecs, all of these options offer some means of mitigating packet loss and the effects of the packet loss on the composite signal. So we're hoping to do that. We're also going to plan some null testing, right? We're going to punch the audio through a transport scheme, a compressed transport scheme, bring it back in, invert it, and mix the two together so we can hear what got omitted, what got dropped out along the way. Choice of compression aside, it comes down to bells and whistles on the particular hardware. Okay, so we thought we'd close with an ID photo collage. This is what happens when you have a twisted mind like me and you are working many days at the same place, but they make you take a new security badge photo every stinking day. So those of you in the know can spot Kilroy down in the lower right. That's Gene Simmons just to the left there. I call that one askew. There's Pirate on the left, shocked, mad, happy, and confused. So those were my moods on the various days. So again, huge thank you to Shane Tovin for the lab and his expertise and all the help. He was working late into the night, even on Sunday, to try and get some more of those files done, because despite 8 days in the lab together, it was just so much that we ran out of time. And of course, Paul, for his expertise and advice and the TVC-15 work. And that is it for me. 3 minutes and 40 seconds left for many, many excellent questions.
All right, did you test the micro MPX encoder built into the Omnia 9 versus the Omnia MPX node attached to the composite output of the Omnia 9?
Yeah, we wanted to keep the playing field as level as possible, and so we wanted to use analog I/O for all of our tests. So using the micro MPX encoder in the Omnia 9 would have skewed that. Like I said, we're going to do some testing with digital AES MPX because we think that's going to offer a lot better fidelity, better signal. And so we'll do some testing with the digital MPX, and we can include the embedded MPX encoder in the Omnia 9 at that point.
See, we are receiving your text questions. It works.
All right. Questions about any other WorldCast products, systems, old cars? I happen to own a full set of Whitworth wrenches, so bonus points if you know what Whitworth wrenches are used on. Whitworth.
Whitworth.
It's actually, Whitworth is actually a separate measurement scaling scheme for hardware. So when you're, and it specifically shows up on old British hardware. So if you ever go to one of the air museums and you see them working on an old Spitfire or something like that, they're going to be using some Whitworth wrenches. So my particular beastie is a 1947 MGTC. The engine is all SAE. There are some parts of the car that are metric, and then there are some parts that are Whitworth. 1/8 Whitworth, 1/4 Whitworth. So you have to have three sets of sockets, really, and open-end wrenches to work on those things. But it's a lot of fun. All right, thank you all for your time. I appreciate it. It's always a great time to come here to WBA, and I appreciate being a part of your day. Thanks.